Welcome back, everyone. It's Sales Squad time. And today, should I optimize my business for a great lifestyle or should I optimize my business for selling it big, for exitability? This is the ultimate entrepreneur's question, and it can be a dilemma for some people. So let's explore all the pros and cons. So in half an hour, you know the whole land. Lay of the land, the whole landscape of this decision and what are pros and cons of it, you can take your best decision. How are we, Glenn?
Doing great. How are you, Simon?
Oh, great. It's Labor Day today, so nobody is working in my country. But as you know, Strategy Sprints operates in so many countries, so I'm on. And and you look super elegant.
Oh, thank you. I try to impress.
Lifestyle business or exitability? What should we go for? Let me start by sharing a conversation that I had this week with a young person who asked me, Simon, how do I get to my first million in net worth? And so their question was around this million is net worth. And so I ask, why do you want to get to a million? And they go, financial freedom. And I say, cool. What would you do with financial freedom? And then he paused and had to think about that. So, okay, now I have that million in net worth. What would I be doing? It didn't shoot immediately up like, okay, then I can golf the whole day. He didn't say, I'll be on the beach because that's my big goal. He said, well, I'm probably going to run a business. And then we were talking, right? He was describing that business and then he was talking. Also, on the same day, I watched a wonderful interview with Mark Zuckerberg on the, I forgot the podcast, something, Dwarnesh podcast. And Mark Zuckerberg was asked why he didn't sell his company in the beginning for $1 billion. And he said, I thought about, well, first, I wasn't financial savvy enough to know what the company was actually worth. Second, I thought about what would I do with $1 billion? Probably wake up the next day a billionaire and wanted to do the same thing, which is meeting people, solving problems that I'm passionate about. And so I would start a business. I kind of like the business that I have right now. So that was his thinking process. So no, I'm not.
Yeah, entrepreneurs are addicted to building and running businesses. So, you know, he's going to be doing the same thing.
This is a very important point, and I'm glad we tackled this head on. I had a client who was in his 80s, and 11 at night he would call me from the Mediterranean on his super yacht to discuss some stuff in Singapore. And I was like, can't you just enjoy your super yacht? And I realized that that was a dumb question to ask, because this is what an entrepreneur enjoys. So we are wired like that. And that is ultimately already one part of the piece. It's about the lifestyle. Also, Ray Dalio was asked once about running his business, that he ran to zero once and then he rebuilt it. And now that he's a billionaire, he's still very active. And people, why are you still active? And he goes, I enjoy the game of winning, the game of staying competitive, the game of having alpha and knowing something before others know it. This is why we do it. So the first question is, why do you run your business? If it is part of your life's work, then that's a very different answer that I will give you than if you just hate it and want to sell it. If you hate it and want to sell it, go for exitability. But if it's your life's work, the question is, what is it giving you, right? And why do you need it? And this is much more around the process. So if you're in that camp, you are liking your business, let me come with the argument why lifestyle optimization is more important than the ultimate number that you can get. At the same time, I run my business as a lifestyle business, but I have always exitability in mind, but we get to get in later. So why is it okay to optimize just for lifestyle? It's absolutely okay. Allow yourself to take some lifestyle chips out of your business in terms of profits every December and to enjoy that. Because you need to enjoy also the process of building the business. This is the case for lifestyle. If you don't enjoy it, you might burn out. If you burn out, there is just no business. So that's one thing. The other thing is allow yourself to enjoy the business, because ultimately that's your life's work. And the really important question is, why are you doing it? What's it giving you? And what would you do with a big sum of money the next day? If the next day would look like this day, well, then just optimize it for lifestyle and ride it as long as you can ride it. Also, it's okay to see it as a lifestyle business, because a couple years ago, I would be offended if somebody said to me, oh, it's a lifestyle business. Usually when VCs or PE people say that, they mean, oh, it's not a real business. It's not scalable. It's not going anywhere. It's not investable. And I think
nobody wants it.
Who cares? And I think that has changed. You can be a small agency. You can be a small knowledge shop, design shop, IT shop, consultancy shop, marketing shop. Run it as a lifestyle business and do 10 millions, 20 millions in net profits. And you can do that in a scalable way, in a way that goes to 100 million. Now, you will not get to a billion. Let's be clear. But do you really need a billion in revenue to be happy and to create jobs, security, happiness for many, many families? No. 10 million is enough for that. 1 million is enough for that. And you can easily get that and have a great lifestyle as an agency. Why? Because you can sell online, you can deliver online. That means you can have a great life. I have 3 kids. I play with them for hours every single day. And that's the reason why I don't need a vacation. It's Labor Day. I don't need a day vacation. I was playing with them. I will be playing with them immediately after this. It's so integrated with my life. It doesn't stop the life. It amplifies the life.
All right. Are you telling me you don't want to go sleep on the factory floor at Tesla? Is that what you're saying?
I wouldn't do that. And it was also very temporary for Elon. He did it for like 6 months or something, right? It's a temporary thing. There might be phases in your business where you have to go all in. And then, okay, for a while, he wanted to really, really nail this thing. And he was new to the business of automotive. And so he said, okay, I'm going all in. I immerse myself. When I get it, I hand it over. And I move on to the next thing. Right? And he did. And now he's working on the second S-curves, the third S-curve, robotaxis, full self-driving, energy storage. So he's already on the next thing. And he's probably not a great example, because not many are running 6 companies and have such a mess of a life. Right, most people want to have a kind of a more balanced life.
certainly.
And they don't want to run 6 companies at once. It's such a mess. I love Elon, but I wouldn't like his life. It's a bit too much. most listeners here probably have an agency, a shop that you can run up to 1 million, 10 million. Tomorrow I'm interviewing Sean, who ran two agencies up to 10 million. And he has a great life. He has friends. He has life. So I think those are good examples to have. And 10 million is a lot. I think we can optimize for lifestyle by leveraging the IP. So when you know something, make it a course. When you have a course, you can have a subscription. When you have that subscription, write a book. Now you have IP in a defendable way. When you have that, you can lend your IP. You can have companies use your intellectual property to create value without you having to do anything. The book royalties, they're coming in every 6 months. I even forgot that I wrote a book, but every 6 months I get royalties from that. That creates lifestyle moments. It's now coming out in China, in Chinese. That will create more royalties. I have to do nothing for that. Nothing. So this is IP lending. One form is royalties. Another form is actually having companies, enterprises pay for your methods, your processes, your knowledge. And there are multiple ways that we can explore how you can scale a service-based business, which traditionally is no business, is a lifestyle business. It is, because you can create multiple revenue streams and stack them upon each other. Some are active, some are passive. So that's the case for a lifestyle business, and I want everybody to allow themselves and not feel ashamed if you have a lifestyle business, because in the end, why did you start a business in the first place? To have a great life and to improve the life of other people. Right? But why? Because you want to have a great life and you feel better when you're creating jobs and when you're creating solutions.
Yeah, I say take the money. I say get the exit and take the money.
Let's do the case for that.
Do whatever. Yeah, okay. Well, you know, it's really not that simple, actually. And there's a lot of reasons why people choose to sell. Mostly it's retirement or financial security. There may be health reasons. And like you were kind of hinting on, maybe they're bored and just want to start a new business. Or I think you even said they hate their business and they want to get out of it. So, you know, whatever the reason, you know, you can sell your business. I think maybe one interesting concept which hits on the agency idea is maybe you've kind of maxed out your niche, right? And the competition is fierce and there's maybe industry consolidation going on. And it's kind of a now or never moment to get your maximum value out of your business. So there's a lot of reasons to sell, and I think they're kind of personal. But if you're going to sell, you've got to figure out who to sell to, right? And that's a big consideration if you're going to exit. And that can either be, if you've grown your business, that can be inside, and that might be a partner or your employees, or we might be talking about a succession with a family member coming in. But I think your big money is to an outside buyer, typically a competitor or an investor. And so you've got to find that strategic buyer, and that is the person that's most able to leverage the acquisition of your organization as a going concern. So if you want to exit, you've got to get your business attractive to that strategic buyer. And maybe they want to, you know, increase their geographic footprint or eliminate you as the competition or acquire your talent or your assets or your products. So let's say you found that person, right? And you're going to go after that strategic buyer. Okay, what's it worth? And this is where we start to diverge from the lifestyle a little bit is, okay, how do I get my value up? And you start thinking about, okay, how do I maximize the value of my business to someone else? And the type of buyer you find is going to dictate what they pay, right? And so I think you've got to kind of come up with a valuation, and whether that's a formal evaluation or an informal evaluation. And typically It's discounted cash flow or some relative measure or cost measure. You know, for relative, it's that's going to be like an industry ratio. Cost is just replacement. I don't think we're really interested in those. We're interested in, you know, the discounted cash flow idea. And that is, it considers your unique situation and it includes your opportunities and risks, your estimated growth rates. And it also, I think what's unique there is that it includes, you know, what's your strategy and what's your competitive advantage? And so when the buyer, you know, when you're getting your business to look very sexy, the buyer is like, okay, what do I actually get if I buy your business? And they're concerned about cash flow, right? Whether you're calling it EBITDA or discretionary earnings or free cash flow, it's when I give you a chunk of money, what do I get back? And how long does it take me to get that? So we're looking at a multiple. So, okay, you've got profits going. You're being responsible. You're paying yourself at the beginning of the month, putting that in the bank. But hey, that's going to be valuable to somebody else if you've done that right. So small businesses, you know, very small businesses, less than 5 million are going to get like a 2 to 4 times multiple, right? So somebody's going to pay you 2 to 4 years worth of earnings right up front. And that's, you know, that's not forever, but it's a decent amount of money. If you've gotten bigger between 5 and 100 million, like you were talking about, you know, maybe you're getting 3 to 6 times. And the businesses that get higher multiples are healthcare and technology, financial services, professional services, like we're talking about, kind of agencies. And I think media and entertainment also falls in there, especially with the attention economy. And a lot of people are building those businesses. But I agree, in the same way, you've kind of got to have your ducks in a row. And you've got to have your business scaled beyond the dependence on a single owner. And you've got to have your moat built, as Warren Buffett calls it, your ability to maintain your competitive advantage. It has to be self-managing.
What do we need to have all your systems optimized? What are the most important elements if we want it to be sellable? Is it brand and processes? Is it IP? Is it something else?
I think that is really buyer subjective and what their goals are in acquiring the business. But if you're working on all of those things and you're maximizing all of those things, that's going to make you attractive to a broader group of buyers. So I think if your goal is to exit, you've got to really hit the ground and get everything maxed out. And maybe that requires sleeping on the factory floor. Maybe it isn't so fun. You know,
don't do this at home, guys. Don't sleep on the factory floor.
Yeah. Businesses are a problem for marriages, right?
I was walking.
And it's time away from your kids.
I remember trying to scale my agency, and I was walking around my town here in Vienna looking for ideas on how to do that. And I remember walking past a McDonald's, and I was like, wait a moment. Every city opens up a McDonald's. You can become a franchisee, you can open up your McDonald's. What are you actually getting? What are you buying? One is brand, that yellow M. And the other is processes. They will tell you exactly how much lettuce in a Big Mac, and you just reproduce that because you know it works. So it's brand and process, brand and process. And I told myself, go home and work on brand and process. It seems to work for McDonald's, so it might work for agencies. Those are probably the core elements, right? Independently of all industries, etc. It works in restaurants, it works on the general area. But now listeners might have very specific questions right now on what people can do with their IP. But if you don't have a recognizable brand, right, that's already a minus. The second is processes. And what is processes for the listeners? Write down how you do marketing, how you do sales, how you do client delivery. We call it operations. Marketing, sales, operations. And then some things do not fit those three buckets. Put them in leadership. So if you start writing down those four things, this is how we do market. This is how we close the deals. This is how we deliver the value. And this is how we lead this whole thing. The hiring processes, the vendors list, how do we select vendors, hire vendors, fire vendors, how do we pay each other? Those are the leadership processes. If you start writing that down, now the multiple is able to go up, because the more you write them down, the more you are telling the other person that it's not just dependent on a single individual.
Yeah, you make a good point. Your profitability and your cash flow are functions of your strategy, your brand, and how you've optimized your business. And the more secure those will be in the future, the better you've done that, and people will pay for that. But you bring up a good point, though. Like, you know, those things can have value without profitability or cash flow. For example, Loom, you know, the software that we like to use, was purchased by Atlassian last year for $1 billion, and they weren't profitable, but they paid 10 times sales. Now, that's the software business with publicly traded companies, but it shows that those things have a lot of value, and people will value that, even at a smaller scale.
Yes. And if they were profitable, maybe they would have gotten 26 times sales or 28 times sales. And why people acquire you can be completely different. They might just need the data. They might need a vertical integration. So there is rumors that Google would love to buy HubSpot, for example, right now. Mm-hmm. And in this case, cash flow is not the most important element. Google has enough cash on their own. What they're trying to do is, I get people from awareness to a certain point, but after that, so they get a client and they're gone. Maybe they have the next ad. But if I had a CRM, an inbound CRM, now I could help them. Okay, what are you doing with all these inbound leads? So they can do the whole value chain for one buyer, which means for them maybe 15%, 30% more work with the same buyers. And that's at that scale is incredible for Google. So they're looking for going deeper into creating value for their buyer, who otherwise just drop out. So they could go a cooperation with HubSpot and say, hey, let's become strategic partners, or they can just buy it up.
Yeah. They're looking to maximize the lifetime customer value, you know, beyond their own business line and expand that. And you can be that for somebody else, you know, if you're looking for the exit.
And when Adobe tried to buy Figma, my observation was, this is something different. They're trying to buy a community of users, because what Figma did really well was building a community. Adobe is an amazing product, but where is the Adobe community? Where do you meet other Adobe people? Did you ever got a template? Let's say you are using Adobe to create to edit animal photos, and I am doing the same thing. Where can you use mine as a template and I use yours as a template? There is no marketplace for that. Figma had that from the very beginning. Hey, I'm building a YouTube thumbnail. You can use mine as a template. Then you build on mine. The template gets better. I grab the template in a better state. So that was the community aspect that I think they were looking for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I wonder if the shift towards the subscription model for software has emphasized the community aspect, because it's no longer, you know, you pay me a lump sum, you know, here's the code and you do what you want with it. You know, we stay connected, even if it's in a financial way, you know, you build the community around that. Hey, this is what you're getting.
Yes. And everybody was criticizing Elon for paying too much for Twitter. Was it like $44 billion or something? For a software that's kind of broken, a social media that's not the best one. It's full of robots and spam. Why the hell are you paying so much?
Yeah, well, he had a vision for what he's going to do with it. And he certainly went in there and cut the labor costs. That was his first act.
That was fun to watch. And I made a video in that time because I was asked a lot, why is he doing it? And in that video, that was now a year ago. In that video, I shared my thesis that I think he's buying it for the opportunity to do what he wanted to do 22 years ago when he started PayPal, to have this one super app for peer-to-peer direct payments and transactions. And I think he's still trying to do that. We might see in the next months attempts at that. I think he's trying to integrate payments. We're also live on X right now with this. So Elon, if I'm wrong, just tell us in the comment what's going on here. Because I think he will try to integrate that you can buy here on X, you can buy stocks, you can already pay people like subscribing to content, or hey Glenn, I like your content, here's $20 to support you. And he wants to integrate other things. We can buy stocks, we can buy crypto, we can buy some groceries, we can buy for knowledge of other people, like you would get a paid newsletter, but you get it directly here. So paying for knowledge, exchange for creativity.
So what do you think? What do you think is the better idea?
I'm the lifestyle guy. And at the same time, I always write down the processes so that I always want to have an exitable business, even if I don't want to exit it. It makes me sleep better knowing that if I wanted, I could sell it for some multiple of current sales. And of course, I prefer a 15x than a 1x. And who wants a 1x? That's not why you work so hard.
No, that's a very reproducible business if you're only getting 1x.
Yeah. Well, most businesses are just worth 1.2x their current sales. So it's basically just worth your current client stocks of this year. Now, that's a terrible exit. Why would you sell that? Just keep doing it. It's better to have another person doing the CEO. So now you are the owner. They have all the work. And if they do the same, you get maybe 20% from these profits every year. Then you're getting cash flow. You're keeping the business, but you're not running the business. And you're getting cash flow from that. That would be even better. But so I'm the lifestyle guy. I run it to have a great life. But on the other side, I also write the processes down like McDonald's. And I want it to be sellable as McDonald's is, for a higher multiple than 1x. So I'm kind of doing both. But if I have to pick one, I pick the lifestyle. Life is short.
Yeah, I think for me, the verdict is it just depends on your life situation. If you're able to just keep the business and let it run and structure it where you can step back and have as much free time as you want, then sure, keeping it is all right. But you may be in a situation where you have to sell. And so you've got to get it, you know, you've got to get everything slick and tight, and you've got to be ready for somebody to step in. And it needs to be valuable to them. So I think it depends on your situation, whether you go for the exit or you keep it as a lifestyle. And certainly as you get older, it's just, it's not worth the headache. I'm going to go sit on my super yacht, right?
Yes. And also, that's why, you know, in the Monday sessions of the 200K Club, each Monday we're looking right now at stacking upon each other multiple revenue streams that are active, like business, but also passive, like capital gains, dividend gains, payments that come regularly without you doing anything, royalties, rental income. So when you stuck, because you said maybe you have to sell, this is something that we can somewhat control, because if we have different assets, passive and active, generating income in multiple ways, we never have to sell one of those. For example, I am heavy in Tesla, and right now in Tesla stocks, right now they are in the red. I'm down on that investment. So, but fortunately, I don't have to sell the stock. So I will keep it 3 more years. Mm-hmm. And in 3 years, it's probably looking good. But if I had to sell it now in the red, that would be a terrible situation. So never allow yourself to be in a position where you are so monochromatic, just depending on one thing to go right. And you don't have to. You can diversify your assets, have some active, some passive. If you want help, join Glenn and me in the Monday sessions. It's strategiesprints.com/JVC. Because you want to always be in a position of maneuverability, of optionality. And that is in our control. Warren Buffett said this often, said, I want to never be in a position to have to sell anything. That's why I have a big cash position all the time. It's not optimized, because having cash is not optimized, but I have optionality. And that is important over the long run.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I mean, you definitely got to have your money put away and utilizing it in ways that diversify and reduce your risk. And when one thing is rocking and rolling, maybe the other thing is suffering, and then they switch places, and you can always sleep at night and not have to worry. Especially if you own a lot of Tesla stock right now, because I'm sure people aren't sleeping at night, right? It's been a wild ride lately. But if you keep your eye on the ball down the road years from now, it makes sense.
Yes. Elon, we are not sleeping well. All right. Glenn, thank you for this session. This was If to Optimize Your Business for Lifestyle or for Excitability. Next week, we're going to be here, same time, same place, with the question, should you have a sales script or should you wing it when you show up in the sales call? What should you actually do? A nailed down, rigid script that works like a machine, or winging it, or something in between? We will find out next week. Thanks, Glenn. Thanks, everybody. See you soon.
Avoid trying to do thousands of things that doesn't work. We have 274 templates for your business success. Reach your ambitious goals with one-on-one sprint coach. We double your revenue in 90 days.
What if your business would run well even when you are on vacation? Discover how 1,600 business owners have regained their freedom using the Strategy Sprints blueprints. How they enjoy living their dream and watching their business scale. Get the exact checklists they use to go from stressed to fulfilled using the Strategy Sprints method. Order